The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I was just reading a story about a team of Israeli doctors who were rushed to Cyprus in order to give life-saving treatment to a lady who was suffering from postnatal cardiac issues, and she needed this special machine that allows the blood to be oxygenated outside of the human body. And an Israeli team was flown over to Nicosia. It's only about an hour flying time to treat this lady, bring her to a hospital in Tel Aviv. It's always nice to have a good news story just before Yom Kippur, right?
Absolutely incredible. And those are the stories that we should be talking about. Amazing. Really, really special. What we shouldn't be talking about but have to talk about is the Netanyahu pre-indictment hearing and how it affects the coalition. What is going on there?
Well, the pre-indictment hearing concluded yesterday, 4 days of pre-indictment hearing. Lots of news about it, but very, very little new coming out of the hearing. Some people have assessed that really there was nothing new to present in the hearing, that despite Netanyahu's legal team promising that they were going to disclose new facts and new information to the Attorney General to allow him to view accusations against Prime Minister Netanyahu in a slightly different light, the reports have suggested that really very little new came out of it. And so now we simply wait to see what the next actions are. And it could be until we might have to wait until the middle of December to really know what will come out of all of this. And, of course, in the meantime, the process of the clock is ticking on the process of building a new government and a new coalition. It certainly won't wait until the middle of December. So until then, we're kind of in limbo as to what happens on the Netanyahu legal front. But, of course, there has been very little or even no progress in building a coalition over the last day or so. And, of course, now we're going into not only Yom Kippur over the next few days, but we only really have one working day on Thursday before we go into a week and a half, effectively, of a Sukkot holiday. So none of that is going to really help the process of building coalition. And really there's nothing new to report. Everybody seems to be in the same position as they were before. Avigdor Lieberman has come out just reinforcing what we already know about his position, which is that, you know, he doesn't want to be involved with the ultra-Orthodox parties in a coalition. He won't sit with them. You know, he's just simply come out to reinforce all of the things that he's already said before, just to make sure that people know that he's not buckling. He's not giving in on any of the issues that he set out as part of his platform, which include civil weddings and include a new take on the conversion law and on the recruitment law, the law that recruits to the army. These are things that he set out in his platform and in which he's still standing by today, you know, just to demonstrate to the general public that he's not prepared to give up on those. And so we are going into Yom Kippur not knowing anything. It was interesting that a lot of the politicians decided to send out public messages of apology for actions that might have offended people during the year. I think there's some of them that have got a lot to apologize for, but it's interesting that they're just using this opportunity before Yom Kippur to soften their approach a little bit. It's going to be also interesting to see what happens on the day after Yom Kippur and how things progress from there on.
Really, really interesting. And it's so fascinating how Yom Kippur impacts on even this process, that politicians are coming out and apologizing for things that they might have done over the past year. Incredible. It's really an amazing thing because it just shows how introspection is relevant for every single level of society, no matter who we are.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Really amazing. The Palestinian Authority has decided to accept tax money owed to it by Israel in spite of Israel continuing to deduct money that it paid to terrorists from the and their families.
So this is the anti-pay-for-slay law that Israel has enacted, which effectively prevents the Israeli government from transferring money to the Palestinian Authority, equivalent to the amount that the Palestinian Authority pays to terrorists and their families. And we know that they're spending a lot of money, apparently, at something like 500 million shekels a year, that the Palestinian Authority, that's equivalent of about 150 million US dollars or thereabout. The Palestinian Authority is paying this money over to terrorists and families of terrorists in order to keep them up. And of course, Israel has objected to this and has enacted a law which says that that is an amount that will be deducted from the amount that is effectively owed to the Palestinian Authority by the Israeli government through money that's been collected for taxes and similar things. And the Palestinian Authority decided that it wouldn't accept this deduction and therefore wouldn't accept the money. But they've changed their view now. Obviously, financially, things are pretty tough. We understand that the Palestinian Authority was forced to cut salaries of law-abiding employees, as the report says, rather than those who have undertaken terror activities. So those salaries were cut by something like 40 or 50%, while the payments to terrorists and their families were not cut at all, and they continue to be paid. But finally, the Palestinian Authority has come to such a financial crisis that it is now decided to accept the money as is. It's quite a lot of money, 1.5 billion Israeli shekels, equivalent of about 400 million US dollars or thereabout, 400 to 500 million US dollars. So a lot of money. And it seems as if though the Israeli government will pay this over, and of course will continue to deduct, as it has promised to do, that money that's being paid over to the terrorist families. The Palestinian Authority is not making any change to their policy of these payments at all. And so this will just continue, I suppose, indefinitely, at least for now, because the payments to the so-called martyrs and their families is simply going to continue. So that money now going across to the Palestinian Authority, and I guess that what their tactic was to try to somehow create financial crisis within the within just the man in the street sort of situation, with people's salaries being deducted, and then use that as a lever to accuse Israel and to try and create some sort of anti-Israel feeling within the general population. That seems to have failed, and now the money will be transferred as requested by the Palestinian Authority. And I guess we will move on to the next tactic that they're going to try in order to generate anti-Israel feeling amongst the people in the general population.
What's interesting to me is that there was a period a couple of months ago where the world started taking note of this, and I think it was thanks to the USA, thanks to Donald Trump and his team, that they highlighted this issue, that the Palestinian Authority was still paying paying money to terrorists in order, and obviously what they did was encourage further terror. At one stage, Mahmoud Abbas denied it. He said no, it's not happening, but it was very clear that it was. Is there still international attention on this, or has everybody forgotten about it and just continues to fund the Palestinian Authority as they were?
Well, I think some of the funding has actually dried up, certainly from the US government and from some other sources. The funding has dried up, and this may well have been a contributing factor to this financial crisis that the Palestinian Authority is experiencing right now. But as a general rule, I mean, while that fact is now taken as given, I mean, within the international community, everybody knows that these payments are being made, but no big deal is being made of it. I don't know if it's been forgotten. I think it's just been put on hold. It's just been put on ice. People recognize it. They know about it. And so what? So, you know, let's continue with our daily activities. It's not clear to me exactly what the funding sources of the Palestinian Authority are these days. I do know that they're certainly earning less money than they did before, and obviously that's affecting the general wealth of the leadership in particular, because they were doing very well out of the foreign funding money. You know, that's kind of, their point was made, people took note of it, some action was taken, and everybody's moved on from that, and I don't know about forgotten about it, but just certainly just moved on from there. So it's certainly not playing a role right now. And the Palestinian Authority are not trying to deny it, but it just is what it is. And, you know, like many other things that we see in this part of the world, even though that would be an entirely unacceptable action to take, in, you know, a democratic normal society, somehow it's just kind of taken as given and people are moving on.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. Time is 7:55. Israel ahead of Yom Kippur and on the actual day, what does it look like? What is it like to be in Israel on Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur is like an all-encompassing experience in Israel. There is absolutely no possible way that anybody could miss the fact that it's Yom Kippur in Israel. And it's not only on the day itself, but even in the days leading up to Yom Kippur, you absolutely can't miss it. There would be, you know, this is the day when people really find a way to identify as Jews, even in the Jewish country. Many people are not affiliated to any religious activity, but you'll find that most Israelis will fast, will try to fast. Many will even seek out religious services, try and find a shul to go to on Yom Kippur. There are shul services that are set up by local municipalities and school halls and in municipal halls across the country for those people who are generally unaffiliated and wish to identify on that day. And they are generally well attended. And, you know, there's a good atmosphere that people experience. People dress up in white. You see everybody walking around in white. And of course, in the days leading up to Yom Kippur, lots of activities. Last night there was a massive slichot service at the Kotel. Took place at 11:30 at night. Tens of thousands of people turned up to slichot at the Kotel.
I'm just looking at a photo of that. It is beyond imagination to see so many people there.
Yeah, I mean, a special slichot service at the president's residence, where he invited not only IDF soldiers and people who are just going into the army, but also just neighbors in his general neighborhood, people who live nearby the president's residence and were invited as neighbors to attend a special slichot service at the president's home. And of course, the general public of Israel are also invited, as they are indeed, to attend the sukkah, which will be constructed at the president's residence. And he will open on a particular day to invite the general public to come to his sukkah. Sort of harks back to the days of Menachem Begin, when he was prime minister and opened the prime ministerial home every Shabbat afternoon to whoever wanted to turn up and have tea and something to eat and suda shlishit at the prime minister's residence. It was just a general kind of thing that people did on Saturday afternoon. Which is, you know, something quite strange. But of course, Yom Kippur, the day itself, is a unique day, not only in Israel, but I would imagine around the world. Not only does Israeli airspace close down and the airport does not have any flights landing or taking off at all over Yom Kippur, all places of entertainment, all shops, all supermarkets, all restaurants closed. Everything from about 1-2 o'clock this afternoon will absolutely close down and nothing at all will be open. No public transport at all over Yom Kippur. And of course, no cars on the road. And this is kind of where it becomes very unique. People do not drive in the street on Yom Kippur at all. So it means that what happens is that the streets become pedestrianized. Not only the high streets in the middle of cities, but indeed even the Ayalon highway that goes through Tel Aviv will become a pedestrian walkway. People will just walk in the middle of the road. And of course, this is when kids become king in Israel. They get their bicycles out and they get their roller skates out and they take over the roads. And this is a huge tradition where everybody's on their bicycles. All the kids are out. People are just generally meeting each other, enjoying each other's company as everybody just kind of wanders around the streets. It's a very, very unique experience, a very unique atmosphere, something that you really will be unlikely to see anywhere else in the world over this 24-hour period. And of course, talk of the Yom Kippur War is a must at this time of year. And every year, every Yom Kippur, new information comes out about this year. I was just watching last night some of the conversations that took place within the government, within the security cabinet, within the people who were actually running the war. Some of those conversations were astonishing. and mind-blowing and scary. It is absolutely scary how close the state of Israel came to be, came so close to be destroyed on occasion during the Yom Kippur War. I don't think we had any notion of how close the destruction was. And it's only now, with the benefit of hindsight, with the benefit of those conversations that we're hearing, with the benefit of some of the realization by the people who were running the war, that things were really going badly, that the state of Israel was almost on the verge of being destroyed. We have to just be so grateful for what we have right now. Miracles took place, people's bravery, there were just some amazing actions. And so I know we've run out of time, so all that remains is for me just to acknowledge that I appreciate people who have participated in my broadcasts over the year, and I know that I don't always appeal to everybody, and some of the things that I say might be a little offensive to some people coming from where I come from. I'd just like to apologize if I've offended to anybody during the course of our discussions, to you, Howard, and to the listeners out there. None of it was intended, of course. It's all in the interests of trying to present a balanced, as balanced as possible, a point of view, and I hope that you will find it in your hearts to forgive any offense that I might have caused, and I look forward to picking up again, as we always do, on Thursday after Yom Kippur.
Anthony Rach, thank you as always, and certainly I can't think of a reason to to have to forgive you, but that's just me. Have a meaningful fast, and we will speak to you on Thursday morning.